on today's Compassion Radio.
And we Americans, we don't confront properly. We confront too late and too angrily.
Yeah.
And so the secret is doing it God's way.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. Celebrating our 74th year of ministry and adventure, this is the daily broadcast journal that highlights the triumphs of God in the world's most difficult places. This is Compassion Radio. We welcome those of you who make an effort to tune into this daily unique radio broadcast. And to our brand new listeners, we are so encouraged to hear from you. Today, Bram's wife, Sandy Floria, joins him once again in the interview chair in a follow-up program with new friends Chris and Faith Creech. Back by popular demand, you may recall that we visited with this couple about a month ago regarding some intrepid missionary work that Sandy and Faith were able to experience together in Kenya. Well, today's visit encompasses an entirely different and unique mode of ministry that can be a real sore spot for many in the body. Here's Bram to get us started.
We have back with us today on Compassion Radio a couple of friends that we've learned to love, and we learned to love them very quickly because they have the kind of heart for missions that we love to hear about. Chris and Faith Creech are a pastoral couple that spent a lot of years in pastoral ministry and then got challenged to step even farther out and live a new cross-cultural ministry life over in East Asia. And now they're back here and back and forth. They're doing work with missionaries and pastors in East Asia, as well as mentoring and dealing with real spiritual issues that are facing ministry families right here at home. So I want to welcome them back to Compassion Radio. Faith, Chris, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate you sharing your time with us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the kind of work you're doing. You know, you had to write a book about it, because what good pastor doesn't write a book if he has a passionate thing to say about a particular subject? And that book is called Toxic Church. It's a pretty toxic title. So tell me a little bit about
it. It gets attention, and that's what the publisher intended, and it works.
So tell me that all of church isn't toxic.
No.
But there are plenty that are. That's the scary part. So why that particular angle, and how does it frame the heart of your ministry now?
Well, when we were in Asia full-time, and we're still there, I would say, probably half-time, but we're in Asia full-time, though the majority of the problems in Asia were regarding very controlling leaders and abusive leaders, we also found that there were situations that mirrored what were going on in the West with pastors who are under a great deal of stress and turmoil. And so we thought it would be good to write a book that was primarily directed at the problems that pastors face in their churches, but the intent, and as you read the book, you'll notice this, it is not just pastors, it's any leader of any ministry, or actually any person working in ministry, can find themselves in difficult, conflicted situations with people in the ministry team. That's why I wrote the book that way, and it does come out of the lessons we were teaching in Asia.
So tell me, lesson number one, what did you discover that rocked your world and said, we got to do something about this?
The pain we saw that was consistent throughout every Christian circle in every country that we'd worked in, that was the number one catalyst that caused me to want to write the book. Also, the reality that what goes on in most ministries that try to address conflict is that they, I put it this way, they try to make people play nice. And it works with people who are not highly dysfunctional, but there are those who are so dysfunctional in their background that they will only value themselves on the basis of their ability to control others, and they have a purpose in life. It's kind of like what Adam did to Eve, the woman you made me do it. They're always intending to identify someone who causes problems, and then not only to identify them, but also to punish them. And so that's the heart of the problem, and that can occur very heavily in the Western culture. It's different in the West than it is in Asia, but it's very prominent here.
So the punishing personality, would you say it's more prevalent in churches than in the society at large, or we just seem to become aware of it?
No, it's more prevalent in churches.
Why is that?
I've got eight reasons I have in my lessons that I teach, but the primary reason is that churches are very willing to accept volunteers who come in to help. here's the example I use. If someone new in your church comes and they are willing to, hey, I want to help out. I want to clean the toilets and do the Sunday school class. And we never say no. We let them do it. And then someone says, hey, this person is a professional. We need to make them an elder in the church. And all of a sudden, they have someone who they have not vetted properly in political terms. And they have not gone through 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 in true diligence. And the result is that they have brought someone into their church who could be potentially dangerous. And it is very common. It occurs in the workplace, of course. It occurs in the secular world, of course. Everybody knows what it's like to be in a schoolyard, and there's always a bully running around. Hmm. Well, that's what these people are. They're bullies, but they have become very pious-looking bullies. And I don't mean to say this is the only scenario, and it doesn't happen in every church, Bram. It does not happen in every church. But it is common, and it does occur.
And when it occurs and the church leadership does not have the tools or the training to recognize, to discern that this is going on in their midst, they face what kind of result?
Well, what takes place is I've grown up in a family that had a bully in the family, and I learned to compensate just by turning the other cheek and being quiet, then I'll do the same thing in a church setting. So these people develop little cells of enabling people around them. It's a systems approach to understanding churches and how they work. And the final result is the church becomes truly dysfunctional, with not only people attacking, but other people saying, you go get them, and that kind of an attitude. And all of a sudden, you got an elder or a member of the church is being attacked. And there are a lot of other issues that go on with this, Bram, as you could imagine. But suddenly, you got a church that's in conflict, and you got trouble, and a pastor is being forced out for reasons that are beyond. The irony of it is that the pastors who are most likely to be forced out are the most effective ones.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who are challenging the power, the status of the power broker.
Okay, Faith, you have the heart of the story, because my guess is that this is not just about something you studied, that the two of you, and you working with your husband, faced this kind of opposition somewhere along the way in your own ministry.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so, we did.
So what did you go through as the wife of the pastor facing this kind of opposition?
Very difficult to see your husband go through this and not being able to do anything about it. Just being able to listen and support him, but really being helpless to do anything about it. And then to see my daughter go through it, being attacked by church members, and then just not being able to do anything about it. Just being able to pray and just, you know, that's the only thing I could do. So that was very difficult.
And I might add that she's a very stable, mature Christian, but you know, this is something we discovered over and over again. Almost anybody will break when they come under those kinds of attacks. That's why, as I mentioned previous time we talked, Bram, that oftentimes I sit with pastors and they just start bleeding all over me, because, first of all, they knew I'd been a pastor a long time. They knew I was safe because I wasn't in the church and I wasn't a member of the denominational leadership. So they just start bleeding. That's the only way to describe it. And the wives would do the same thing with Faith whenever we'd have opportunity to get together. It'd be unbelievable the things that would come out.
The kind of bleeding you're talking about, it seems to me, what you said before about the kind of counseling you would do, is that the only real healing for that kind of bleeding is tears.
That's
and
right.
The ability to vent grief, to let the emotional and spiritual pressure out in order to receive then what God has for them.
Well, the person who's under attack is, there's a term in counseling, it's called they become the identified patient. And the background of that is that the counselors know that when someone is brought in for counseling, there's a better than 50% chance that the person who needs the counseling is the one who did the bringing, not the one who was brought. Hmm. And that's what Adam did with Eve. So what that means is if you're under attack, everybody's saying you're the bad person, you're the bad person. And if you have enough people saying you're the bad person, you start believing it. And sometimes people they make serious mistakes under that kind of pressure. They become reactive, and they can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. They start doing the things that they're accused of doing.
And I trust you're enjoying today's fascinating interview on Compassion Radio, and we promise to get right back to the second half in just a moment. Right now, a special word from Cher Nelson.
Hi, friends. This is Cher Nelson here today with some info on our May project. You know, in India today, Christianity has grown by millions in the past 20 years, but for all the good preaching and brave missionaries, in many places something is still holding them back from planting healthy, growing churches. And that's not a political thing or a religious opposition. It's something much more simple, a lack of quality Bibles. For years, we've reminded you, our partners, that it's estimated that every Bible sent to mission hotspots ends up bringing 5 new believers into the kingdom because it's shared with other people. And guess what those 5 new believers need in order to flourish in their new faith? You guessed it, their own Bible. So until the whole world has heard, there will always be a shortage and a need for more Bibles. And that, my friends, is good news. Why? Because we can do something about it. Where it rains Bibles, the church grows, and it grows fast. And this month's project partner is doing something about it in an extremely cost-effective, Great Commission advancing way. And that's why we're so excited to have teamed up with an amazing organization called Bibles for the World. With your compassion and help this month, we will join with Bibles for the World in their Great Commission mission to bring the word to more villages and language groups than have ever had or held their own Bibles before.
Reach out to us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. And you can always find us online at CompassionRadio.com. Let's get back now to the program.
And they can. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. They start doing the things that they're accused of doing by becoming very defensive or very depressed. And then you got a real problem, and usually that's when the ministry is close to being over.
So, Faith, I've heard the term, and maybe you can corroborate this, of a culture of silence among pastors' wives and ministry wives. Did you find that to be true in your own experience, that there was really nowhere you could go to get counseling for this or to get help in your situation?
Yeah, I think that's true because you really don't have any friends in the church, so there's nobody you can talk to in the church. And then, you know, a lot of pastors' wives don't work outside the home, so there's nobody, you don't have friends outside the home. And if you do work outside the home, I was an elementary school teacher, so I did have some friends outside the home, but you still can't talk about it, you know, because you don't want to let anybody know what's going on. You know, it's kind of like a secret thing you have because you can't share with anybody. You know, nobody's going to understand what you're going through. So you don't have any friends. So the wife doesn't have any friends. The husband, of course, doesn't have any friends. You only have each other. So that's true. There is a culture of silence. And even if there's other pastors' wives in the area, which rarely happens, you know, even they are not going to understand because they're not in the same situation you're in.
Well, and they may be experiencing some situations that they're not free to discuss or that they're afraid to discuss with you as well, or feel that they can discuss with you.
Yeah. Right, right.
Okay, so the two of you have identified the problem, and now God's been inspiring you to step in with some real solutions, because the solution cannot be continued silence, and it can't be denial. It's got to be something different. It's got to be a transformative option, the one that wasn't on the table before. So what is the breakthrough? How do people that are in ministry find a way out of these kind of situations?
First, they need to understand how Satan works, and that's what we teach in our lectures. They also need to understand, and we do this in small groups, how they have responded to Satan's tactics due to their own makeup, their own DNA, so to speak. And then we address the curative parts of it by giving some biblical principles. I call them the oft-overlooked biblical principles, and there are quite a few of them. The biggest single one is confrontation. We Americans don't like the word confrontation, and I often say there are two groups of people who do confrontation wrong, those who do it and those who don't do it.
Yeah.
And that's true, because in Asia they don't confront. In America we confront in hostile, angry ways, and that's not biblical.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some very simple biblical keys that are simply not applied. Can I give you an example of one?
By all means. We are talking, about stepping into a kingdom culture here and not just reinforcing bad habits of a Western culture and calling them good. So, yes, by all means, let's redefine what the word confrontation is supposed to mean in a kingdom context.
Okay, here's one simple example. And this is what we Americans do not do. We would say we follow our Bibles, we don't. In Matthew 18, we're told, if your brother sins, go and reprove him in private. Okay, here's what I point out. It doesn't say if your brother offends you. It says if your brother sins.
Yes.
You know, offense is a different thing than a sin, and we go into the reasons why we can be offended that are really couched in our background of our own upbringing. It also does not say if your brother sins the 20th or 30th time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that. It says if your brother sins, prove him in private. So you and then we actually role play how you do that, and we have all kinds of scenarios that we set up in the small group sessions, and we have people role play how they do this and how they can be obedient to Scripture. As an example, 2 Timothy 2, where Paul says, and the Lord's bondservant must never be quarrelsome, but always kind. Verses like that, or 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2, you appeal. We talk about appealing, being gentle, being kind, but also we call it the principle of zero tolerance. If you accept an attack one time, it's going to get worse. And we Americans, we don't confront properly. We confront too late and too angrily.
Yeah.
And so the secret is doing it God's way.
Now, let me hold there for a second there, because you mentioned earlier about the toxic problem in churches of punishers, the bullies moving in. We're not talking about enabling the bullies to do this punishing. You're talking about a different kind of person that the Word of God is saying must step in and confront sin where they find it. What kind of person
Correct.
Is that?
Well, we actually go through a long scenario of how to discover who is the bully in the group. And there's some very simple ways. As an example, who won't follow the leader is someone you got to look at with a suspicious eye. But there's about 8 different keys to following that particular person. We discover that the people who are least likely to admit the problem are the people who are the antagonists. They're least likely to change. They're always willing to blame Eve, or in Cain's place, Abel. And they are the ones who are the ones who are not going to accept the correction that is needed. So the task becomes identifying the persons who are likely to be in the bully class, and then teaching those who are around them why they are enabling or allowing this to go on, and teaching them biblical principles of confrontation.
So what you're saying then is that you're trying to teach those who have previously been enablers to become correct confrontational wisdom people, to be able to discern those things and apply biblical principles, and thereby correcting an error or a sin in their own lives.
Yes, and also understanding why they have been unable to do that in the past. That's very key. And that's why the small group exercises we do become so important, because they begin to recognize the roles they have been playing. We use some counseling terms, the scripts that they have been living in their lives, which have allowed them to take that kind of abuse. And, of course, a simple example, this is in Asia, but a simple example is that people say in frustration, but we have no control, we can't do anything. And they say, you always have control. How do we have control? You can leave.
I think we say that here in America, too. I can't help the way I feel. I can't help the way I'm responding. It's the old tapes, as counseling people will tell you, that you have to erase those old tapes and replace them with new truth and information that's correct.
With those situations, Sandy, we move those people. We have a 10-step program we use, and we move them into receiving counseling from Christian counselors who are well-equipped to handle this type of situation, because we can't do all of that in a framework of a few week classes. Although we can get a good start, we can't complete it. And as a matter of fact, we're doing the same thing right now with a couple in Kenya that you met. So we're now transitioning them to a professional Christian counselor.
Now, Chris, Faith, you've given us a great little taste of the ministry that God's brought you into because of a lot of hard experience that you've earned over the years in missions and in ministry here in the States. So we're glad you've been willing to step out of that hurt yourselves and onto something that's of real victory and now a real ministry and a value to the kingdom. You're helping churches rediscover kingdom ethics. These are things we can talk about on the air because they're not as sensitive as some of your international missions work is right now. So please, by all means, fill in the blanks for us. The name of the book again, where they can find it, and how people can follow up with you and your ministry here in the States to take advantage of your expertise if they feel like God's nudging them to do so.
The place to start would be our website, which is toxicchurch.org. Very simple place, and the book can be ordered through there. There's a link that goes to Amazon.com to order the book, and we've done everything we can to keep it very affordable, and it is. The other thing is that on that website, there is our email address, and we'd be glad to have any emails sent to us directly. You mentioned previously, Bram, that if anybody wants to contact us through you, you'll forward things on, too.
I would gladly do that, yes.
Our goal right now is to teach others how to use this material, because it's nothing new, because it's nothing but systems therapy, Christian systems therapy applied to churches and missions, but we also realize we have to spread this out, and so that's what we're doing. We're teaching others.
And teaching the principles that the apostles themselves were teaching to their people to make sure that they could be able to survive a generation of real struggle that they were going through.
Yeah, one thing I'd be remiss in mentioning, if I don't mention it, I'm going to have the academic dean at Denver Seminary upset. We're teaching this course. We're teaching this same course in August at Denver Seminary. So contact Denver Seminary or contact us if you want to find out how to go to take that course. So
very good.
Keep that in mind.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best with the new course offering there at Denver Seminary. What a fine institution that is. We've had a lot of interaction with them and some of the fine scholars you've had there over the years. So I'm glad you had that opportunity and that venue to work on perfecting the principle that you've described today. And I hope that more people will have a chance to read the book and follow what you're doing online. And, of course, friends, be praying for the creatures as they aggressively go at one of the key killers of church productivity and church life. I mean, the kingdom is under assault, and usually from within. So we are not about witch hunts. We are about living discernedly and to live with real joy and passion for Christ, which can overcome a lot of these issues just by the fact that we bring it to Him, that we're not afraid to. We're no longer shamed into a corner. We're not hiding anymore. There's real power and life in letting God and His light into these dark places. And the creatures are doing a marvelous job at making that possible in many, many places. So if you are in that kind of church where you just wish that the light of Christ could get to the center of this struggle you're in, maybe these are the folks you need to contact. I know they'll steer you right. So, Faith, Chris, thank you so much again for being with us on Compassion Radio.
Bram and Sandy, we really appreciate you guys.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, following in the footsteps of our longtime president, Dr. Norm Nelson, is a no easy task, but Bram Floria has his boots on the ground.
Friends, this is Bram Floria reporting to you from the Czech Republic in Central Europe. I want to talk to you about the Vision Team. These are the people that make Compassion Radio rock steady. You're the folks that have been listening to us for some time and know the value of hearing from what God's doing on the front lines of faith will build your faith and will help others to build the faith and the future of the church around the world. When you give on a monthly basis, you do something that is essential to this ministry, but is not only that, it's a blessing to you because you know that when you send your gift, you're directly involved in every single project that Compassion Radio is involved with. When you give, you know and you pray at that moment. And then you're reminded throughout the month, because I believe the Spirit will bring that to your attention, to pray for the thing that you hear God's doing in the Central European Republics, in South Africa, in South America, or in East Asia. Wherever God brings us a story, you know that Compassion Radio is going there in your name and in your blessing to bring the gospel of Christ and the compassion of Christ because people like you prayed and gave. So please, folks, if you haven't considered being part of the Vision Team yet, now's the time. We need you.
And what is the Compassion Radio Vision Team anyway? Compassion Radio partners like you who believe in the message and work of Compassion Radio and want to keep hearing stories from the front lines of faith. The commitment you make to support us monthly for a sample gift of $25 makes everything we do possible. For years, we've reminded our partners, like you, that it is estimated that every Bible sent to mission hotspots ends up bringing 5 new believers into the kingdom. And guess what those 5 new believers need in order to flourish in their new faith? You guessed it, their own Bible. And that, my friends, is good news, because we can do something about it. Where it rains Bibles, the church grows, and it grows fast. And this month's project partner is doing something about it. And that's why we are so excited to have teamed up with an amazing organization called Bibles for the World. With your compassion and help, this month we can join with Bibles for the World in their Great Commission mission to bring the Word to more villages and language groups that have never had or held their own Bibles. Each bundle of 50 Gospels of John can be printed, delivered, and distributed for only $25. And full Bibles can be placed in believers' hands for $6 a copy. How many would you like to send to these precious souls? As you support Compassion Radio and our Bibles for India project this month, we have a token of thanks to help you prepare for Father's Day. For your gift of any size, we'll send you 5 meaningful minutes for dads. This small book packs inspiration, biblical guidance, and prayer starters into 5-minute devotions for dads. Reach out to us by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And our website is easy to access 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll catch you again next time with more Compassion Radio.